Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
The pilot shortage in America could make for a real interesting Memorial holiday weekend and for summer travel. Today on the show, IBEW Local 58 in Detroit, Michigan, and the latest from the United Steelworkers. Welcome to the Friday, May 26 edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on at least six platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and Stitcher. We have two guests on the show today. We're going to start things off with Andre Crook. Andre is a business rep for IBEW Local 58 website, IBEWLocal58.org. This is one union that is growing by leaps and bounds. There are over 5,000 members. They cover a good chunk of eastern Michigan. Electrical, telecom, broadcast, manufacturing, maintenance, government workers, you name it, they are doing it at Local 58. And a lot of that is dealing with these EV charging stations, the ones that are going to be out in the public and the one you probably need in your home when you get that EV vehicle, because a lot of homes are not currently equipped for that kind of thing. Andre is going to speak to that. He's also going to talk about green technology, solar, a lot of solar going on in Michigan. And you know what all this means? It means there's a lot of jobs for residents, not just in the Detroit area, but all over. Because the technology is changing, we need to learn that technology and create those jobs. And we're going to speak to that. For our second guest on the show today, we're going to go to Pittsburgh and join Guillermo Perez, who is a staff rep for District 10 of the United Steelworkers, proud sponsor of America's Workforce. Guillermo is a labor lawyer and organizer. He's worked with a number of unions, including AFSCME and SEIU, and he's going to zero in on a huge win and a first contract for museum workers at the Carnegie Museums. And this is significant in a number of ways. First, they're doubling the wages for museum workers, and it's happening at the Carnegie Museums. And if you read anything about Andrew Carnegie, you will find out that he did not like unions. And Guillermo is going to speak to that. All right, now a labor update from our good friends at Boyd Watterson Asset Management. You can find more at BoydWatterson.com. We talked earlier this week about American Airlines and the Allied Pilots Association. They reached a tentative contract agreement. This is pretty significant because right now there's a pilot shortage in America, with airlines scrambling to find enough pilots to maintain service levels for summer travel. The strike authorization may have contributed to American Airlines' willingness to reach an agreement. The preliminary agreement was announced the same day that Canadian airline WestJet and its pilots union also announced an agreement for a new contract. Now, WestJet pilots had planned to strike imminently before the deal emerged. The American Airlines and WestJet deals take shape against the backdrop of contract talks playing out at Southwest and United. Delta and its pilots union reached an agreement in March. So definitely one to watch. All right, quick break. When we come back, we're going to check in with the electrical workers in Detroit, Michigan.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Heat and Frost Insulators Labor Management Cooperative Trust. Find out more at insulators.org/LMCT.
Buildings, bridges, skyscrapers, and more. Structures that are the face of our cities and towns were built by members of the Iron Workers Union. That's why it's important that our workforce of over 130,000 iron workers continues to be the safest and best trained in the field. With 154 training centers, we invest over $90 million annually in safety and training. We're growing the next generation of union ironworkers. There are so many reasons to put your trust in our ironworkers and their employers. Learn more about us at ironworkers.org.
This segment of America's Workforce is brought to you by Survey and Ballot Systems. SBS has been providing unions with secure and flexible election options for over 30 years. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com to learn more.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining,
atomic energy,
and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
America's Workforce appreciates our sponsor, the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council, who represents more than 18,000 workers from 19 affiliated local unions and district councils.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And remember, you can check us out on Facebook or follow us on Twitter. Real simple, AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the United Labor Agency. You can find more at ulagency.org. Before we get to our first guest, just want to mention that we have a very special show planned for this coming Monday, Memorial Day. Two very good guests. First is Adam Rock, who was featured in the April edition of the American Legion magazine. We talked to Jeff Stoffer about him, and he said, you know what, you got to get Adam on your show. We talked a lot about him. We did, and that's going to air on this coming Monday, Memorial Day. He is a retired Army colonel. Adam spent three decades directing, managing, and coordinating a number of programs in the military, and he's now, this is the cool part, he's overseeing a program that has seen tremendous success. It's called Hiring Our Heroes. You get a chance, Google that, Hiring Our Heroes. And over the years, that program has connected thousands, I mean thousands of vets with very good paying jobs, many of them union jobs. Also on the show on Monday, Will Attig will be joining us. Now, he is the executive director of the Union Veterans Council. He's been on the show a number of times. And recently, get this, Will put together a delegation of labor leaders to meet with Ukraine's ambassador. Why? Well, it was an effort to show solidarity with the soldiers and the people of Ukraine. Very powerful stuff, and we're going to cover that all on Monday, special edition of America's Workforce for Memorial Day. Right now, let's go to Detroit, Michigan. Joining us on line one is Andre Crook. Andre is a business agent for a pretty large local, electrical workers, IBEW Local 58. Andre, you're telling me off the air, you're over 5,000 members.
Yes, we are.
you got a lot of brothers and sisters in that local. That's great. It sounds like you're growing. I want to talk about that, but I want to talk about you first. I know your business rep mentioned this at the top of the show, that you joined them in 2007. What made you go in this direction in your life, Andre?
Well, it was kind of like an accident, man. My brother was he's currently married to my sister-in-law. She was his girlfriend at the time. Her father used to own a union shop, and he said, hey, Dre, I know you home from school for the semester. You want to go apply for this job? I said, cool. Went to the training facility, applied. We both applied. Took the test in June, interviewed in July, and I was working in August. Unfortunately, my brother didn't get in. I did, but he's an operator engineer now, and here I am. Didn't know anything about the trades at that point. Didn't know about being an electrician. Didn't know it could obviously turn into a great career that it is now. And hey, look at me. I'm a business rep.
There you go. And operating engineer, well, I'll tell you, they're doing pretty well right now, too. I mean, all the trades are really cranking, so that's
Oh, yeah.
That's good news. Definitely good news there. So let's talk about moving up the ladder here. When did you become business agent?
In 2021, August 21.
Okay. Oh, okay. So how's that working for you? How's the local doing right now?
Oh, it's doing great, man. It's like drinking water from a fire hose, man. But you got to learn to turn it to the side and not try to take it head on. You know, trying to figure out how to wade through a lot of this work, man. It's crazy out here right now. You know, we got like 99.9% employment with our guys. You know, it's this industry is really changing and picking up a lot, man. People are building around the Detroit area like crazy. It's expanded and growing, and you know, we happy to build. So,
you cover a big chunk of Eastern Michigan. I see on your website: electrical, telecom, broadcast, manufacturing, maintenance, government workers. I mean, you got a big area there. What's leading right now? Is it this EV charging infrastructure? Is that what everybody's focused on right now?
Yes, we are focused on it right now. It's the EV isn't so the adoption rate for the cars is steadily inclining. So we're trying to get ahead of that industry. But right now, it's the preparation for the EVs and building the battery plants, building the actually retooling the assembly line plants here in the state. And then a lot of residential and mixed use is being built because people are moving to Detroit and moving and living in Detroit in the area. So that's what our construction is moving on right now.
Andre, if you don't mind, can you be specific as far as the training, what kind of training goes on when it comes to this EV charging infrastructure? And I caught this on your website, certifications for EVITP, which stands for Electrical Vehicle Infrastructure Training Program. That sounds pretty complicated to me. And I would imagine that your local 58, is pretty much focused on this right now. Can you give us some details on what's going on?
Yes, I can. So EVITP is a training that is offered in addition to your already being a licensed electrician in your area. So for Michigan, to be a licensed journeyman, you need 8,000 hours. And I believe it's around 750 or so school hours and 4 years of experience in order to even take the journeyman's license to qualify for it. Once you qualify for your journeyman's license, you're able to take the EVITP, which is a program that Jennifer Medford put together, her and her partner out of California. They, it's 20 hours, and then it's a two-hour proctored test after the 20 hours that you, 20 hours worth of modules. And yes, it is going to, it takes a lot to be an electrician, right? People really don't understand the depths of knowledge that you need to have in order to install this type of technology, right? You want to install it safe, right, the first time. Because the first time you install something wrong and it burns down the car or the garage or somebody's house, that's going to be a problem, right?
Yeah.
So you want somebody to go in that knows what they're doing, to be able to look, assess the situation, because a lot of the homes in the Detroit area were built in the early 1900s, and some of this stuff hasn't been touched since then, right?
Yeah.
So you don't want to have somebody that's inexperienced or doesn't know what they're doing, honestly, working in your home on something that's so technical that can cause a lot of damage, you know. So
is there a lot of demand for that right now in Detroit? And you think about Detroit, I mean, this is the home of the UAW. I know we're talking with the IBEW here, but a lot of cars coming out of Detroit, they're being retooled. We're hearing so much. I can't tell you how many interviews we've done with various trades that are building those battery manufacturing plants. Yeah. You probably heard Ford has got a big presence in Kentucky and Tennessee. They're cranking it out. The industry is ahead of everybody on this. There's no doubt about it. They're pushing EVs like crazy. But I'm just wondering, what in your area in Detroit, Michigan, as far as people accepting this kind of thing, what's the picture you can paint for us, Andre?
People are buying them, man. It's huge waiting list. And when the programs that they have now is you buy the car and through like VIA, right? You get your car, the dealership has us, the electricians, come out. Once you get your car ordered, we go out, we go install the charger in preparation of you getting your vehicle. So before you even get your vehicle at home, you have a charger already there installed.
Mm-hmm.
DTE has a program also where they're financing the green energy parts of this home. So like a smart panel upgrade, a backup generator upgrade, a general panel upgrade from, you know, like around Detroit, some houses had a 60 amp service.
Yeah.
So you can get a service upgrade from 60 to 100 and get the charger installed, and they put it on your bill and you able to finance it through your DTE bill. So it's, and it is, to your point, it is going. People are actually doing this. Like, they're picking it up and they're going forward with it.
Pretty amazing. We're speaking with Andre Crook, who is a business agent for IBEW Local 58, Electrical Workers 58, IBEWLocal58.org is their website. We'll continue the conversation. All this means to me is we're going to have to get more people in that local because the workforce development stage is exploding right now. Later in the show, we're going to check in with one of the reps of the steelworkers out of District 10, which covers the state of Pennsylvania, talk about a huge win for museum workers at the Carnegie Museums. It's all part of America's Workforce. Back in a few.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Ironworkers. You can find more at ironworkers.org.
Union members need to be heard. Reliable and convenient union voting has never been more important than it is now. Make voting easy for your membership by working with Survey and Ballot Systems. SBS offers encrypted and monitored solutions that ensure your elections are accurate and accessible for every member through mail-in, online, and in-person voting. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com and take the next step in getting secure and auditable elections.
You'd like to upgrade your fund's vision care, but you need to roll back the clock on the cost. Roll it back to the 70s. iMed offers members 76% average savings versus retail on eye exams, glasses, and contacts. Enjoy similar benefits to an indemnity plan, but with consistent savings and a better experience. Endorsed by the National Labor Alliance, iMed takes a consultative approach to tailor your vision insurance benefits. Learn more at iMed.com/union. Figures based on client data. Visit iMed.com/union for more details.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the United Steelworkers. You can find more at usw.org.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at boydwatterson.com.
You're listening to America's Workforce, and this upcoming segment is brought to you by the Ohio Federation of Teachers. Check them out online at oft-aft.org.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And remember, you can check us out on at least six platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and Stitcher. And when you get an opportunity, here's what you do. Just sign up. receive our shows on a regular basis and give us a rating. We always appreciate those 5-star ratings, so please keep them coming. By the way, this next portion of America's Workforce sponsored by iMed. Switching to managed vision care may save your fund money and deliver a better experience. So here's what you do. Go to iMed.com. That's E-Y-E-M-E-D. iMed.com/union. And you will learn a whole lot more. All right, let's go back to Detroit, Michigan. Rejoin Andre Crook, who is a business rep for IBEW, Local 58, IBEW58.org, the website. They cover a good chunk of eastern Michigan, and we're talking over 5,000 members, 4,000 of them in construction, rest dealing with private enterprise. And I was reading a story on the web here, Andre, about this platform. It's called, what is it, VIHA, which is VIHA. It's designed to connect qualified electricians, that would be you, with consumers for installation and service of products like EV chargers, solar, battery storage. And I see you've got this partnership with them. Can you give us a little more insight on what this platform is all about and what it's going to accomplish for your area?
So VIHA, it's honestly, in my opinion, man, it's great for like future use, right? The customer is the first and foremost important part of this, right? The customer of anything nowadays wants to be able to, one, see what they want, buy what they want, and have what they want at their front door without having to really do anything, right? So three clicks. It's like Amazon.
Uh-huh.
So it's construction-based Amazon. So with the platform, you go on, you navigate it, you say, hey, I want this charger. The platform picks charger out. Then through the platform, it gives like a prompt that says, hey, do you want this job? As a as our partnership goes, you know, we're the ones on the top of the platform.
Mm-hmm.
So we would get preferred choice. Hey, these are the jobs that's going on. My contractors look at it. We go out, we assess it, look at it. Hey, you need a panel upgrade to be able to install this charger. You need, you know, basically it's not a straightforward installation. This is what you need. Talk to the customer, let them know, then the customer, and then you let VIHA know. VIHA then involves themselves with the customer, and they handle all the logistics through the customer. Boom, sends you out. You go out, do the installation. Once the customer is satisfied, then it's released, and then you get paid. It's like it's getting rid of the bureaucracy, in my opinion, of dealing with a million people in between, right?
Mm-hmm.
Streamlining construction work. And that's kind of what the gig economy is right now. You know, you can DoorDash your food, you can DoorDash your, you can get your groceries delivered right to your front door. You can have, you know, pet food, convenience store stuff just deliver right to your door. And it's, you know, three clicks away. And construction, if we're going to be still a part of the economy in that way, we have to be able to adjust and move into the wave of the future. So that's what I believe he's doing right now, is putting us into that position of, you know, Amazon for construction.
Yeah. I hate you have to bring up Amazon, but I get it.
I mean, it's the comparison, bro. I get it, right? I get it, but it's the comparison, right? It's the
model. I know. I know. I'm just teasing you here, but you're right. You're right. But that's the world we live in today. Nobody wants to go to a store. They want to get on their phone, order something, and next thing you know, a box arrives at your front door. And that's kind of where we're going with everything today. So this is already working right now, and I take it it's working well. Is that right?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. We've been working with him a little over a year and a half now, and we have we're growing. Our contractors have been all around. He's utilized IBEW contractors, NECA contractors, throughout the country doing this.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we do a lot of work in the Detroit area where he's based and where we're based, but he's done installs throughout the country, and with us, partnered with us, we've been able to secure that work, and we've been it's been successful. You know, not everything has its pinch points and its pain points, but for the most part, you know, the customers have been happy, our contractors have been happy. I haven't heard anything about, you know, anything that was detrimental between the customer and the contractor. Now, the platform itself, you know, it had some kind of a little hiccups with the formatting of the platform, being able to get like the initial starting point for the contractor. And I'm gonna be real honest, and you might want to bleed me out when I say this, but a lot of our contractors aren't real tech savvy. They're a little older in the game, the ones that are established and doing the work. So that might have been the pain point, but a lot of it is easy to sign up, you know, get your contractors on and be able to get into the network to be able to fulfill the work.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there's a lot of change going on right now, and a lot of people are fighting that change, but it's going to happen whether you like it or not. I get that. I definitely get that. You know, let's touch on solar, if you don't mind. Mm-hmm. I'd like to zero in on that. What's the presence of solar in your area? I'm kind of concerned about that because you're talking Detroit, Michigan. Is that picking up steam over there or what?
Yes, it is. So at our facility, we're actually a zero net facility with around 600 solar panels on our building right now. We're going to be expanding that and putting battery backup storage to be able to capture it at night and be able to utilize it at night. So we're a true net zero building. I think the future is microgrids, man. You get a bunch of solar, you get the battery backup system, and I think we'll be able to keep up with the potential of rolling blackouts that's going to come with the adoption rate of these EV chargers and all this, everything being electrified. You're electrifying your heaters, your heat pump for your water, and all these things. So you want to be able to take some stress off of the grid, and that's where the solar and the battery energy comes in. That is, you know, you can recycle it and feed back to DTE and sell some back to DTE or the energy municipality that you're a part of. And that's where the solar comes in at. You grabbing the energy from the sun, harvesting it, and you giving some resilience to the grid. Because Lord knows 2003 happened again. We don't want 2003 to happen again a third of the country is in the dark.
Oh, I know. That was a big wake-up call, definitely. And I know your national IBEW in Washington is really, really concerned about this as far as our grid, our power structure and all that. When you say microgrid, are you talking individual homes or are we talking neighborhoods here?
I would believe neighborhoods from a standpoint of being able to like capture the lower and middle median income earners. It's expensive, right? Regardless, the technology is expensive. You can't expect someone that's, you know, making $54,000 a year to buy a $80,000 solar array and battery storage, and then turn around and buy a $60,000 bi-directional EV car, and then have to pay the insurance on that car, and have to pay homeowners insurance that's going to skyrocket with having all this equipment on your house. So I think that it will be a communal thing. I think that the municipalities and the state governments and, you know, like even the state, I believe, is going to have like these microgrids set up to where you can, you know, it'll be leased or free to certain points, or be able to for people to be able to afford it and use it,
right?
You know, rolled into the land that have that source shared, so it's not so much of a burden on, you know, just the individual.
Yeah,
and I think it'll look a lot cleaner too than to have, you know, 10,000 houses in the neighborhood with all this solar on top of it and, you know, battery storage, big sea cans in the back of the house with batteries or whatever it is, a garage full of batteries. So,
no doubt about it, Andre, the future is going to look a whole lot different in the next coming years here. And a lot of it is dealing with being electrified. So with that being the case, and you mentioned how things are going to cost. I mean, the EV cars aren't cheap. Solar's not cheap, at least not now. But what about in your area? I mean, at one time, Detroit was the auto capital of the world. I mean, you see auto plants all around the country. You see these transplants from foreign countries and all that. It's different. The UAW has changed. All unions are changing and all that. But what about the future of especially Local 58 and maybe attracting more folks in your area in Detroit to get into the trades right now? Is that happening? Can you speak to that?
Yes, it is, man. We work extensively with the city of Detroit, community groups, the high schools, community college. You know, we even have our application process is coming up June 19th through the 23rd, I believe. And being able to bring in apprentices, man, we have like 5 to 1,000 people wait list, you know, rolling wait list for pretty much every category to come in and work in construction for Local 58. So you have to pass the aptitude test and get interviewed in order to be to come into the program. Now, there's other ways of coming into the program. You can be we could be organized in, which means you have experience in the industry already. You come in and you get interviewed by our executive board, and you get membership that way. But as far as looking at the future workforces, like the high schoolers and 19 to 23-year-olds, we have a skill trades task force that's geared towards them, that we work with the City of Detroit City Council to be able to attract members, people who want to come into the trades period. But when it comes to IBEW Local 58, we do a lot, bro, because we understand that we need to be expanding and growing, because if you aren't evolving, you're dissolving, you are dying. So to be able to get that industry, I could talk to you for hours about all the community partners we have when it comes to the workforce development. But to this industry part with the electrification, it's going to take, honestly, a new classification of worker, a new type of worker to be able to go into this industry and flourish, in addition to electricians and, the people who are also involved with the infrastructure with the heavier fast chargers. So, you know, you got the DC fast chargers that are going to be geared towards the gas station models to be able to get people in and out when they travel and doing commerce. And the level twos are going to be the ones that are at your home and at the businesses where you're going to be able to park and leave your car for, you know, for an extended period of time. And to be able to keep up with that adoption rate and to be able to have a service and maintenance crew, we have to get ahead of it now. We have to be able to start recruiting these people, putting them through, making them electricians so they understand the whole, you know, the safety, the, you know, the testing, the, you know, the base model education that you get in that 5 years of how to safely work on these fast chargers and these chargers. Because once again, you know, it's dangerous work and we don't want anybody getting hurt. We don't want any property damage. We want to be what we are, IBEW, best, brightest, and educated, and keep on going about what we're doing. And that includes getting that future workforce.
I tell you, I liked what we were talking about. Let's maybe set up another interview and we could talk about those partnerships. How's that sound, my brother?
Sounds great. Anytime for you guys.
All right. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to check in with the Steelworkers District 10. Talk about a first contract for museum workers at the Carnegie Museums. Back in a few minutes.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as healthcare and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the United Auto Workers. Find more at UAW.org.
You'd like to upgrade your fund's vision care, but you need to roll back the clock on the cost. Roll it back to the 70s. iMed offers members 76% average savings versus retail on eye exams, glasses, and contacts. Enjoy similar benefits to an indemnity plan, but with consistent savings and a better experience. Endorsed by the National Labor Alliance, iMed takes a consultative approach to tailor your vision insurance benefits. Learn more at iMed.com/union. Figures based on client data. Visit iMed.com/union for more details.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America. You can find more at cwa-union.org.
A great union requires a reliable election system. Survey and Ballot Systems is a trusted election partner with more than 30 years of expertise in managing union elections. By partnering with SBS, your union can ensure it gets an auditable process and a high level of customer service. SBS is here to help you conduct your union vote securely, transparently, and with trust building always in mind. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com to learn more.
America's Workforce is presented by the Laborers International Union of North America. Feel the power right now at liuna.org.
From the Golden Gate Bridge to the St. Louis Gateway Arch, the Sears Tower, and just about every building, bridge, and structure in between, our cities and towns wouldn't be the same without ironworkers. With over 3,000 contractors employing more than 130,000 highly trained ironworkers and 20,000 apprentices, the Ironworkers Union stands ready and able to shape the future of our skylines. Learn more at ironworkers.org. Ironworkers, the sky's the limit.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And remember, you can check us out on Facebook or follow us on Twitter, AWF Union Podcasts. And all the shows are archived there. And remember, if you like a show, and I know you like a show because we're getting huge amount of downloads coming in, please share that show, awfpodcast.com. And we count all the downloads. Our sponsors like to know how well we're doing. And I can report right now, we are heard in 49 of the 50 states and 11 countries. Canada is our top country. We are being picked up in 9 of the 12 provinces in Canada. And I know that's good news for all workers, especially the steel workers, because they have a presence in Canada as well. We're talking about a global union here. Joining us on our live line right now, also their proud sponsor of America's Workforce, is Guillermo Perez, who is a staff representative for District 10, which covers the state of Pennsylvania. Did I pronounce your name correctly? Guillermo, is that right?
You did, brother.
Okay, good. And he is based in Pittsburgh, where the Steelworkers are based. And he's going to talk about organizing at the Carnegie Museums, which is quite interesting on a number of accounts. But first, Guillermo, I see you served in a couple of unions. Talk to me about your path to the Steelworkers. I'll let you pick it up from there. Go ahead.
Well, let's see. I started my career in organized labor as a labor lawyer and got bored with that and decided to become a union organizer. And did some organizing for the Service Employees International Union in Chicago. From there, I went on to be a recruiter and trainer for the AFL-CIO's Organizing Institute. And then I took a job with AFSCME, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. I worked for CSEA in upstate New York, mostly a public sector union with some private sector. And then I saw an opportunity to work for the United Steelworkers in Pittsburgh. As you said, an international union, an innovative, militant, tough industrial union that is now organizing in all sectors. And it's just been a really amazing experience being a steelworker in southwestern Pennsylvania, I can tell you that. And I've been with the Steelworkers now 12 years. Started mostly as a labor educator, but now I'm doing bargaining agent work, and I had the honor of helping an incredible bargaining committee reach a first contract with the Carnegie Museum of Pittsburgh, which we think is a great achievement for them and a great achievement for our union and really a great achievement for all of southwestern Pennsylvania.
In many ways, we're going to talk about that. So why don't we get into how this started? Did the museum workers, were they looking for a union, or did they come to you first? How did that happen?
Well, we had organized the Carnegie Libraries of Pittsburgh, the institutions actually have, they share a building in Oakland here in Pittsburgh. And, you know, the museum workers saw what was going on with the library workers and said, well, yeah, we're paid horribly. We are struggling to have careers at these prestigious institutions that pay us so poorly. And yeah, hell yeah, why not? Why shouldn't we have a great union? So, I mean, it was a lot of the organizing was done during COVID. It was pretty amazing. And it happened just really, really quickly. And we soon found ourselves with, winning an election easily and having over 500 museum workers to represent and fight with to take on this, a prestigious cultural institution to get a first contract. And it was not easy. The museums were hard bargainers without a doubt. And it became pretty obvious to us that our first task in terms of what we wanted to accomplish with this contract was not only to get sort of the basic element of a good union contract, right? Grievance and arbitration and anti-discrimination language, and health and safety language and seniority and all of that. But most importantly, to lift people out of a poverty wage. Folks may not know, but Pennsylvania, the minimum wage in Pennsylvania is still the federal minimum wage, if you can believe that.
Oh, my.
It's $7.25 an hour.
Wow. I didn't know that. I know a lot of states have taken it upon themselves to raise that, and they've been successful in a number of those drives, but Pennsylvania.
Yeah, not in Pennsylvania. No. And so people were making, when we organized, some people were making $8 an hour to work at the Carnegie Museum. Our first order of business in this contract was to end poverty wages at the Carnegie Museum. And that meant for us, based on our research, that at the very least, the museums had to pay no less than $16 an hour. And that became our goal in this contract campaign. We launched it. The goal itself, we told the world that we were demanding a living wage now. at the opening of the International, the Carnegie International, which is a world famous, it's one of the oldest international contemporary art exhibitions in the world. It was first done in the late 1890s. And so, you know, we made press all over the world when we told all these distinguished visitors, donors, coming to the prestigious Carnegie International exhibit, that there were people who made that exhibit possible making poverty wages. And so, you know, year and a half later, after some hard bargaining and a lot of actions, a lot of demonstrations to put pressure on the museums, they came around and we got our $16. We were able to get raises, 60% of this bargaining unit, we were able to get them raises between 15 and 30% in the first year of this contract. And so this has had a huge impact on the public, the nonprofit sector here in southwestern Pennsylvania. Because as I said, because of our low minimum wage, it suppresses wages everywhere, but most especially it does suppress wages in the nonprofit sector.
Guillermo, did you hold the ground on that $16? I mean, when you first of all, it was difficult to organize. That's part one. Part two is getting right. That first contract. And again, it took you 18 months to get that done. I mean, that just shows you how ridiculous labor law is in the country. But and we could do a whole show on that. But the $16, did you say, hey, we're not leaving until we get this done? Is that how it worked?
It was basically like, we are not going to let up and stop telling the world that the Carnegie Museums are, you know, one of the most important cultural institutions we have in the United States. And it's not just one museum. I mean, I don't know if people know this. There are really four museums that make up the Carnegie Museum. Each of them alone, very important cultural institutions. But when you combine them together, we're talking about really, you know, one of the major cultural institutions in the United States. So not only is it the Carnegie Museum of Art, which is a museum of contemporary art that Carnegie started in 1895, then some years later, we had the first expansion to create what was called Dinosaur Hall. Carnegie had a fascination with fossils, and that's how we ended up with the Carnegie Museum of Natural History. And then many years later, in the 1990s, the museums took over a planetarium, the Buell Planetarium, and created what's called the Carnegie Science Center. And then finally, in 2004, the Carnegie Museums of Pittsburgh establishes the Andy Warhol Museum with the Andy Warhol Foundation. So we're talking four museums, over 500 museum workers, and across those museums now, $16 is the minimum wage that any museum worker is gonna earn. And this, as I said, had an impact on 2/3 of our bargaining. This is a workforce that is largely part-time. They were poorly paid. A third of the workforce turns over every year. So these folks needed a union in a big way, and we're just thrilled to death to have them be part of our union.
Well, Guillermo, congratulations on what you accomplished. That's monumental. But there's another side of this. There's a big side of this. And the very fact that these are the Carnegie Museums. And those of you listening right now, when you get an opportunity, go to the internet and read about Andrew Carnegie. This guy's got to be rolling over in his grave right now because he was not union friendly, was he?
No. In fact, you know, the thing is that he's, you know, the world really knows him as a philanthropist, right? He was the one of the world's richest men who pledged to his claim was that no super wealthy person should die with tons of money, that you should spend half your life building your fortune and the other half giving it away. And to some degree, he really did that. You know, he funded, you know, just hundreds of libraries and music halls, and he established these amazing museums, or the first one, the Carnegie Institute. So he's had an incredible impact on philanthropy in the United States, but people shouldn't lose sight of the fact that philanthropists like Carnegie made their fortune off the backs of working people, and particularly in the steel industry, which was, an incredibly dirty, dangerous, difficult job. I mean, it still is, but if you can imagine what it was like in the 1890s, it was a horror show. And Carnegie, you know, we did have the precursor to the steelworkers in the 1890s, it was a union called the Amalgamated Association of Iron and Steel Workers. And they had managed to gain a foothold in the Carnegie Steel Empire at Homestead, the Homestead Works, which was a town about, I don't know, seven miles south of Pittsburgh along the Monongahela River. And in 1892, Carnegie set out to destroy that union. He was absolutely dead set against having any of his folks unionized at Homestead. And to do it, he basically forced the union into a strike. It was really more of a lockout than it was a strike. He fortified the plant. They built, what was it? It was like 15-foot fence around the facility. He hired 300 Pinkerton detectives so that they could lock down the plant and bring in replacements. There were like something like 3,800 workers in that facility. 800 of them belonged to the union, but the other 3,000 ended up striking in solidarity. And in 1892, on July 5th, the Pinkerton Navy, as they were called, set out on the Monongahela to land at the Homestead Works. And the workers were onto it immediately. And when the Pinkertons arrived at the facility, by that time, the fences had been torn down. People basically pushed the Pinkertons back. We had a 13-hour battle that went on, and at the end of it, you had 7 steel workers were killed and 1 Pinkerton guard. And Carnegie appealed to the governor, who brought in 8,000 National Guardsmen to patrol the city and allow 2,000 replacement workers to be brought in. And they busted the union.
Yep.
And really, the Amalgamated never recovered from that. And it really wasn't until decades later, right, with the steel workers, the organizing committee that had been established by the CIO, the SWOC, Steelworkers Organizing Committee. It wasn't really until the 1930s and 40s that finally the steel industry was unionized. And Carnegie was long dead by that point. But, you know, his legacy, these cultural institutions, are still with us to this day. And now, for the first time in 100-plus years, they're steelworkers. The people who make them work and successful are now part of our labor family. They are steelworkers.
As it should be. I like the way you encapsulated all that there, Guillermo. Thank you so much for joining us today. People need to know that story. They need to know what labor did to get to where we are today. It's so important. So thank you for joining us, and you're welcome here anytime. I love your background here, and let's talk more about what's going on with organizing, because there's a whole lot of it going on right now. Okay, brother?
Yes. Museum workers all over the country are organizing. This is we were part of a trend that's happening around the country, and cultural workers generally, and people in the service sector. We have a whole generation now of young people who are flocking to unions and organizing unions because they see the impact, the difference it can make in their lives. And so we're just thrilled to now add the museum workers, as I said, to our ranks, and we hope to see much more organizing in the nonprofit sector, because it is a significant sector in our economy.
Oh yes. Well, you definitely keep in touch, and you can read more about this story at usw.org, national website for the steelworkers. That'll be it for another edition of America's Workforce. Coming up on Monday, Hiring Our Heroes, special edition, Memorial Day edition of America's Workforce. Also, we're going to hear from the Union Veterans Council. Until then, all of you, have a safe and wonderful holiday weekend.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.